Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
Operator, give me the sheriff's office. Come on.
My name's Billy. You the fella looking for his wife?
Yes.
Yeah, how'd you know? Did you see her? You seen her? Please, if you know something, tell me.
Well, I seen her, maybe.
Where? When?
Inside a little while ago. She came in on a truck.
Right.
A big semi.
Then what?
Well, then she left on another truck.
With who?
Well, some man.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Shots. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 1997 film Breakdown. Written and directed by Jonathan Mastow, the film stars Kurt Russell, J.T. Walsh, and Kathleen Quinlan. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. Sean Pryor.
What's good, everybody? Hey, Eric, man. Thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And let's go ahead with the drink roll call. What do you have beverage-wise for me tonight, Sean?
Tonight I have a Otra Vez. It is a Goze-style ale. It's kind of a sourish type beer. I thought it would be for like a guave style beer. It would be a little bit more sweet, but it's more sour than sweet, but it still goes down smooth.
Hmm. That sounds much fancier than the wife beater beer that you had last time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, we upgraded this time.
That's right. I'm actually having the same thing that I had on the last recording, just a different brand. So what happened was, Anel went and picked out a 12-pack sort of sampler, seasonal sampler kind of a thing through Blue Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I'm having the Blue Moon Cappuccino Oatmeal Stout.
Ooh, okay.
From them. And it's a limited release, and it's a little bit, you know, it's kind of what you would think. It's an oatmeal stout, and it's got a little bit of a coffee finish to it.
Mm.
But it's pretty good. It's pretty good for this this chilly January day.
Nice.
Alright, so with that completed, I should mention that Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs, download a title for free, and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. And with that, all the business is out of the way. We're ready to kick off our discussion of the 1997 film Breakdown.
This is crazy. Look at this. If you win this mail-in contest, you can choose between $90,000 or 90,000 donuts.
A leisurely cross-country trip.
What did you do?
Hang on, I can't steer.
An unexpected breakdown.
Can you believe this?
A helpful passerby.
Folks, all right?
Our car broke down.
I can give you a ride to Bell's, a little diner about 5 miles down the road. They got a payphone. You call a tow truck, they just come in and haul you out.
It could happen to anyone.
Excuse me. I'm supposed to meet my wife here. She's dark haired, about 5'5".
Doesn't ring a bell.
Pull over!
Now an ordinary man.
Listen, I'm looking for my wife.
Look, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've never seen you before in my life.
Has an unbelievable story.
It was him. It was this truck.
The police are doubtful.
I searched the truck. No sign of a struggle.
The locals are suspicious.
You know, there's over 100,000 people go missing in this country every year, all vanishing without a trace.
But he's not worried about the ones who think he's crazy.
My wife did not leave me.
He's worried about the ones who know he's telling the truth.
You the fella looking for his wife?
I saw what happened.
We're gonna be watching you.
can't see my wife.
Don't object, just start walking.
Get down on the ground!
Oh, he's just one's in on him.
What do you want?
Kurt Russell.
You better pray she's alive.
Breakdown.
Where is she?
And the IMDb plot synopsis goes like this. Jeff and Amy Taylor are moving to California and must drive across the country. When they find themselves stranded in the middle of a desert with hardly anyone or anything around, their trip comes to a sudden halt. Amy has taken a ride with a friendly trucker to a small diner to call for help, but after a while, Jeff becomes worried. He finds that no one in the diner has seen or heard from his wife. When he finds the trucker who gave Amy the ride, the trucker swears he's never seen her. Now Jeff must attempt to find his wife who's been kidnapped and is being held for ransom, but who can he trust? Okay, so breakdown. This recording was brought about because of my continual journey through the years of the Black Box. Right? And so I was listening, and I forget what show it was. I want to say Julian was involved or something, or was around the time, around that time. And somebody mentioned Breakdown, and you're like, don't you talk about Breakdown. You know, you're doing your Sean Pryor thing.
Yes.
And which always makes me chuckle when I'm on my way to work, you know. And so I was like, oh, Breakdown, I remember that movie. That's good. We should talk about that. And so I sent you a text. I said, we should talk about Breakdown sometime. And I got a capital lettered fuck yes. So my brief history with this is 97. So I was still in high school living at home. And I remember seeing this trailer and thinking, oh, man, what a terrible situation to be in. Like, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. You don't have anything. Your vehicle doesn't work. Your wife's trying to help out the situation, and then she goes missing, and the people that had her or left with her claim that they've never seen either one of you. And I was like, wow, what the hell is this going to be about? And then you get kind of your late 90s trailer finish with a bunch of explosions and shit going over bridges and all that kind of thing. But I remember seeing it. And I remember liking it and thought it was a good film. I hadn't seen it until recently for this recording, so it must not have had that big of an impact on me, but I definitely did enjoy it. But what was it about your first experience, and what's your sort of history with the Kurt Russell film Breakdown?
Let's see. My experience with this movie, let's see, came out in May of 97. I hadn't even turned 22 yet. And I was with one of my best friends, Chris. May rest in peace. We would go to the movies every weekend.
I was going
to
say, that's a regular theme.
Yeah, we would go to the movies every single weekend. When I was in college, that was the thing. We would either like go hang out with friends, go out drinking, or we would go to the movie theater. Mm-hmm. You know, that was always like in the mix. So we'd go out to eat with a bunch of friends and then go to the movies later. But it was a slow weekend that weekend. And I remember Chris telling me, he was like, listen, we got to go see this movie. It's new. That's the best thing out this week. It's Kurt Russell. He's like, I've seen the trailer. Trust me on this one. It's going to be good. You got to just trust me on it. I was like, man, I don't know, man. I was because my whole thing was I was looking at the releases for that week, and I was just like, I don't know. And, like, I like Kurt Russell, but, you know, like, I wasn't sure. I was like, okay, we go. Let's go. So we go to this now non-existent movie theater. This movie theater no longer exists. Back in the day when shopping malls had movie theaters and like, an actual cineplexes spread out all through the mall.
That's what I grew up with.
In Dayton, Ohio, there was a mall, the Dayton Mall, which still exists. And this is before you had all the theater chains surrounding it with their own, you know, with their own movie theaters. So they had like 12 theaters in it, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was 12. They had, close to 10 maybe. They had four cinemas in the mall, and then the extended part of the mall they had another four or five, and those were much, much, much smaller. But the four that were in the main mall were pretty big, but theater number one was the biggest.
Uh-huh.
Like it was that, like, 70-millimeter style curved screen.
Oh.
It was pretty huge. I mean, it was huge. It was huge. And normally that's where the best movie for that, you know, the best movie will be aired there. So say, for instance, if you wanted to see, like, you know, during this period of time, like, I want to say, like, you know, special edition, Star Wars special edition stuff will be dropping eventually. You can see all those movies there. You could, like, I saw those movies there. I saw Face Off there. I saw, let's see, what else did I see there? I saw Independence Day there. Mm-hmm. I saw of Air Force One. I saw the horrible Sony, Matthew Broderick Godzilla there.
All the late 90 classics are being
like
listed.
All the late 90 classics, like I had seen at that movie theater. But anyway. So it's a Sunday night. And, like, you know, we didn't have any classes the next day. So we're like, yeah, let's just go. So we go, and it's, like, the last show. Now, normally, and this is also during a period of time on a Sunday night, you could get, like, an 11 o'clock show mm-hmm. on a Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
So we go. We pay our tickets. We walk in. This is a huge theater. Sits hundreds upon hundreds of seats. We are the only people in there. And, yes. and I'm like, man, I was like, I don't think this movie's going to be any good. There's nobody here. He's like, man, it's going to be good. Trust me. And it started, and I was hooked once the swerve started, once the car jumps out, when we get to the story, once the truck jumps out in front of Kurt Russell and Kathleen Quinlan's vehicle, once that starts, like, I was like, okay, let's go. Mm-hmm. And I was intrigued the whole film, loved every single minute of it. And I just remember, like we had talked before we started recording, I refused to watch this movie again unless I could watch it from the beginning. And every time it would show up on cable, it would be on part where it's like, nope, I want to watch it from the beginning.
It was too precious to you to just ruin the, like, to not enjoy the full experience of it.
Exactly. Okay. And I'm not like that with every film. But for some reason with this one, I'm like, if I can't watch this from the beginning, it's not worth it to me.
Uh-huh.
But when you said, hey, let's do this, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, let's do it. And so, like, I built a fire in the fireplace, had a strong fire burning, and I was like, yeah, I'll just play this and I'll start, you know, I'll look at my laptop and check some websites and catch up on some stuff. The movie started, and I just pulled myself away from the laptop. I was just tending to the fire, and I just kept watching this movie. And I just kept getting the anxiety started to build up again. The tension started to build up again, and I was like, I have to watch this.
I love it. How did you watch this? How did you get this?
I got this through Amazon via the rental service.
Okay.
And because I had Amazon credits, it was free. Uh-huh. So thank you.
So, all right. Was it full screen?
Nope. It was high def. It was high definition for rental purposes. If you buy it for $9.99 through Amazon, it's standard.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But it was like, it was widescreen or what was it? Like, what
oh,
was it?
It was widescreen.
Okay. And see, that's the first thing I wrote down. And I was like, God, what a dorky thing to write down. And I think I tweeted about it when I was watching this too. But so I got the disc from mm-hmm. Amazon and I put it in the DVD player and it's in like native. It's in like the small tiny cube in the middle of the screen.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, what the fuck is this? I was like, what is it like this for? And so I'm, you know, I go through my TV and I'm stretching it and I'm making it, you know, I make it full screen, but then it's, you know, not really the full screen. It's just zoomed in.
Yeah.
And it looks ridiculous. And I'm like, oh, whatever. So my, you know, my modest 42-inch TV or whatever it is really like a 28-inch TV when I'm watching it. So I just scooted up closer to it. In the chair, and it was fine, but I was just like, what the hell? You know, I was sitting there thinking about the first world issues and my first world problem of like, this isn't in the aspect ratio I want it to be. You know, this isn't what I wanted to look like, but I was just like, what a shitty DVD. That's the only way that it comes, and there's no way to change it on the DVD or through my player or anything. You just have to zoom or stretch it from the TV version, like on the TV side.
That's weird, because it makes me wonder, because like, there's a period of time when DVDs were being released in the 90s where there was a full screen version.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a widescreen version. And sometimes they wouldn't put them both on the same disc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it wasn't you know, like an early flippable one or like a two-sided one or anything like that. Like, it had the graphic on the front.
That is strange.
And it looked like crap is what it looks like. I mean, and I was like, well, this is a little late in the game for it to be such an, like a, it's not like it's a first generation DVD that Amazon or that Netflix is throwing me here.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I don't know. So I'm glad that at least if you get it on Amazon, it's not like that. So that's,
yeah.
That's good to know.
It was fantastic. I mean, it looked crisp and clean, and I was house happy. I was like, man, this is good.
Yeah.
So that also lent to a wonderful viewing experience.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. So some of the things that I wrote down at the beginning here was, in the plot synopsis, it says they're moving to California. Okay. You don't really know that or anything about that in the movie for quite a while, because it's not really concerned with that issue. But I wrote, you know, after a good 15, 20 minutes, I was like, who are these people? Like, who are they?
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? Why are they here? And we don't really know. And I get that that's not the point. It's kind of an everyman, and what would you do in this sort of situation? But I was still wondering, you know, why for a while it didn't seem like they were even giving each other names or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all. Like there are like some light mentions as to, man, why did we buy this car? Why are we moving across country?
They get the impression that after he almost runs into the semi or runs into the truck, that when they're at the gas station, that the car that they just bought is quite expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that leads the people in the truck to do what they do.
Yes.
Because they assume that they have a lot of money.
Yes, exactly. So, it's weird, because like, there's a sense of regret, with them traveling to then when the car finally dies, and then the, late JT Walsh, who always plays that bad guy very, very well.
Oh, yeah. He's just a wonderful asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, he's so good at being just a jerk.
One of the best of all time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best of all time. And so, you know, he just shows up as an innocent, innocent truck driver, puts the offer out there, and Kurt Russell's character is like, it's okay. I'm just going to let it cool. Let the car cool down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and his wife is just like, well, I'm going to take this ride.
Kathleen Quinlan from Apollo 13 is what I know her from.
Yes.
From Jim Lovell's wife. Because I was like, God, who is this lady? I know this lady.
Yeah. And so she takes the ride, and Kurt Russell's like, okay. And he just keeps waiting for that tow truck to come, because JT Walsh, as the truck driver, said, we'll get to Bell's Diner.
Uh-huh.
And when we get to Bell's Diner, I'll call a tow truck in for you, because my CB is currently busted. It's not being fixed till next week. All lies. And he's like, we'll get there. We'll get your tow truck, and you can see your wife here, and everything will be fine. And Kurt Russell's like, oh, tow truck my ass. And then, he pops open. He looks inside the Cherokee, and he notices some cables are loose, and he reconnects them, and everything's fine.
Yeah, that's such a strange plot thing.
Yeah.
Like that, well, that, like he just had some fuses that were loose or something?
Yeah. And the thing is, like, and that gets explained later, because the thing that they don't really do, and this is the one filming flaw, is that, like, when MC Ganey's character or something like that
Mr. Friendly from Lost.
Yes. And see, that's another dude too, MC Ganey. Like, he's another one, that dude. You've seen him in a bunch of things, and he kind of plays that jerk.
Uh-huh. He's got a wonderful voice too.
Yes, he does. But he says, like, later in the film, like, you know, you should never leave your hood up while you go in to, like, you know, get your, you know, while you go in to get some stuff in the store or whatever. And so, like, the way it's filmed, you didn't know that they both went in to, like, both, you know, Kurt Russell and Kathleen Quinlan, that they went into, like, the convenience store while they were getting gas with the hood up.
Right.
So,
yeah,
so
the implication was that they unplugged some, or, like, loosened something.
Yes.
But you're kind of, at the time, you're like, what the fuck? Like, what is this, an electric car to where all he has to do is put the, he has to plug it back in? Like, how in the world would that just magically come undone?
Right.
You know, and I was wondering, saw that for a while, I was wondering about that. I also wondered, how in the world would he find J.T. Walsh's semi?
Yeah, see, now, like, that's one of those things, like, you just have to, like, just, one of those things, kind of like chances or things you just need to throw out the window.
Right, and, oh, sure.
And you just have to accept the silliness of that happening. And it's because, like, when Kurt Russell's character goes to Bell's Diner, everybody's like, man, I don't know what the fuck it is you're talking about. Right. You know, he's like, you know, I'm looking for my wife. She's 5'5". She has this type of sweater on, da-da-da-da-da. And they're just acting like complete podunks. And, you know, and you could tell that Kurt Russell's getting frustrated. And he leaves. He sees the truck. He chases after the truck. And, you know, to the point where, like, you know, he's almost run off the road. Then he, you know, he pulls around side by side, then goes, you know, right in, you know, tails right into the front of the truck to make the truck stop. And this is where J.T. Walsh just flips the script. And he's just like, I don't know who you are. I don't even know what you're talking about. And he's like, I never had your wife. I've never seen you before. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I saw this in the movie theater, I was like, what is this motherfucker doing? And then for a second it was fucking with me, because I was like, no, we just saw this guy. This is the guy. You know, J.T. Walsh, this is, I'm like, he doesn't have a twin. Does he have a twin?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on? And then the cop comes up and Kurt Russell pulls the cop into it. And all this stuff is going on. And I'm just like, wait a minute. Now who's mind fucking me right now?
Right. Because I remember thinking, whoa, is Kurt Russell, has he lost his mind? Like, does he have a wife?
Right.
Know? First time I watched it, I was like, what is happening right now?
Right. And that's the scene. I was the same way. So, like, it was really, really weird. And so, like, you know, so then, like, the police officer says, listen, just go to the station and talk to my deputy, fill out some paperwork, and we'll do what we can. And so he goes to the Kurt Russell's character goes to the deputy station, fills out the paperwork. He's looking at all the missing people that are on, like, their, like, paperwork. That's the papers of pictures and photos of people that have been missing for years, while the deputy keeps talking about, you know, well, you know, people just end up missing all the time, and, you know, da 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 da. And, like, you could tell the deputy's trying to cheer up, you know, Kurt Russell's character, but at the same time, he's not helping it. And Kurt is just staring at this wall of missing people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that triggers something in him. He goes back to Bell's Diner, and he's about to set shit off, and he tries to look at, like, all the tickets, because it's an old school diner, so they write down people's names when they order stuff. And he tried to grab the tickets from the dude that runs the place. The dude pulls out a gat, and
the bartender was the old the chief from Rescue Me, is where I knew him from.
Oh, okay.
That cool. FX show with Dennis Leary, and I was like, oh my god, like, I'm recognizing everybody in this. You know, I was like, it's all of those guys,
yes,
and that girl, you know, yes. Sort of movie. Before we get too far along, do you think that you would ever allow a significant other to get into a semi with anyone?
Fuck no.
That's what I thought. I was like, well, she's spunky and looks like she can take care of herself, but she's like 95 pounds.
Right.
And I don't think that that's such a good idea, Kurt.
Yeah, here's the thing, too. This movie came out in 97. Cell phones were still like...
Yeah.
Like a new thing,
yeah,
to most, and like not smartphones, cell phones,
mm-hmm.
Limited range, and the whole nine. They were big, and they're as big as your hand. They're bigger than your hand.
It was one step better than the bag phone.
Yes, yes, just one step better. So, like, so there's limited communication. There's no purposeful, you know, true purposeful use of the internet yet. This is. And this is like, say, now 18 years ago. And only 18 years ago, you would think, oh man, we got all this stuff. No. It wasn't at that level, people. It was not at that level. So at that time, fuck no, you can't go in that truck. You're going to wait right here with me. You ain't going.
Right.
You know.
We're not leaving we're not separating.
No, fuck Spunky. You stay here. I don't know this dude. Oh, I don't have a CB. My CB's busted. Well, you ain't getting in here then, huh? No.
I like that's the quote from the show. Fuck Spunky.
Yeah, fuck Spunky. She was just like, well, you can just wait here and get hot if you want to. You know, da, da, da. Like, no, you gonna keep your ass here too. You know?
Yeah, that was, that's for sure. And what I was, gonna mention about the coincidences that I forgot about was I was watching it and, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm writing down like, well, these are a lot, these coincidences are interesting. Like the guy that, you know, he's finding the semi and, he sees this truck all the time and the thing with the fuse or whatever that was slightly pulled apart. And, but I was writing those things down with a big smile on my face and, you know, eating popcorn and drinking a beer and having a good time watching it and just kind of like, I don't know if this makes sense, but I'm having a good time watching it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of a movie.
Yeah, it is. It is. But the thing is, like I said before, every single minute of this film I feel is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
In all sincerity, I really feel that it's worth it. Like, especially like say for instance, like after the second time, he goes to Bell's Diner and it doesn't work out. And you got this, kid, the guy by the name of like, his character name is Billy.
Oh yeah. And, that pretends like he's some kind of yokel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, is this going to be like their Rain Man for this film?
Uh huh.
And he's just like, you know, he's just like, he just acts very aloof and not, you know, aloof and just off a little bit.
It's almost like he's autistic or something.
Yes. 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 And so he just says, well, you know, I saw the truck. No, you know, but no one's going to believe me. You know, one day I'm going to have a tracker's license, blah, blah, blah. And he tells him to go on. He tells Kurt Russell's character to go on this road. Mm-hmm. And because he said he saw Amy arrive in one truck and leave in another. He tells like Kurt Russell's character's name is Jeff. He tells Jeff, you know, where they have taken her, go there. And like, you know, and Jeff's like, yo, we go to police. You know, we go to police, we get this all straightened out right now, you gotta come with me. And Billy's like, nah, man, you know, why do you, police ain't gonna help you, they're involved in it too. So uh-huh. he gets into Jeff's head. And so Jeff, you know, takes that road that Billy tells him to take, and ends up being a closed highway road. And then, MC Gainey's character pulls up in the truck behind him with the sniper rifle, and Jeff's like, oh shit. And like, you know, and they go on this chase in like the mountains and stuff, and to the point where it looks like Kurt Russell's going to go over a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, in Cherokee, but then he just goes forward and he's really just going down this steep hill in the Cherokee. And then the Cherokee lands in the river and he's just coasting in it in the river. And I was like, oh fuck, what the fuck are you going to do now? And then he's about to try to get out of the Cherokee, but he can't because he's getting shot at. So he goes on the other side because the Cherokee's flooding. So then like he gets in the river and you know, underneath. And he tries this, man, shit was wild, man.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I had so many questions because I was like, so they talk about the police being in on it, and I'm like, what the hell? Like, what does anyone have to gain? Because at this point, I don't understand what they're doing. Right? Yeah. Like, what the hell? This poor guy, like, God, he's got this is terrible for this guy.
Right.
And so then we do get to that river sequence. And I'm like, what the hell is he doing? Like, he's, oh, I'll just drive it in the fucking water, whatever.
Yeah, he's like, look, I got to get away from this dude. This dude's got, like, he's got a gun. I don't have anything, so fuck it. It was just pure desperation. And then, like, okay, well, now my Jeep Cherokee is in the water, and we're floating down the river. What the fuck do I do?
Right.
And so, you know, and he abandons the Jeep, and he circles back to see those people that are after him, you know, salvage the Jeep from the river. And then Jeff gets knocked out by Billy, who we thought was just a yokel. But Billy is with, you know, JT Walsh's character. He's with, you know, MC Gainey's character and some other dude. And they're all in it together. And then it all starts to come together when they pull Jeff slash Kurt Russell out the back of Billy's car. And like, you know, and they just all get like in Billy and Earl and Red Barr and all of them and Al all get together and they're like, yo, we know you from Massachusetts. We know you got money because your wife said that you got money. And if we don't get this money, like $90,000, if we don't get this, you ain't ever gonna see your wife again. And I was like, oh shit, this movie's taking another turn.
Yeah, it definitely did. It did make a real sharp turn there because they talk about the money and that was a thing. I think it was like a ho-ho or a Twinkie or something in the car from earlier. And there was an amount. I think it was like 30,000. Was it like 300,000 or something like that? I thought it was more than 90,000.
Yeah, something like that. Cause like when they said Donut King, cause she said that.
Yeah.
She had said that he was a Donut King, so they believed that. Amy said he's a Donut King, so then once that registered in Jeff's head, he just knew like $90,000, and so then they believed it. And so then he just ran with it. And so, Red Barr, who's played by JT Walsh, Red is like, hey, you see this little city over here? Go in that bank, get the money. And, you know, we'll give you your wife. And, by the way, I got people in this town watching you, and there's no police people there right now because Billy just said there was an accident somewhere, so there are no police in this town right now.
Oh, right, because it was a certain amount of mileage away, and it would take them like 20 or 30 minutes total to get back or something.
Yes. So it's like, go get this money. Go get this money. If you don't, you never see your wife again. Oh, by the way, let me roll back real quick. So I forgot to mention, cause this is like Jonathan Mostow's, let's see here. He wrote this.
Yeah. Wrote it and directed it.
This is his like second, this is his second film that he directed. His first film was a film called Beverly Hills Body Snatchers in 89, which I've never seen. And then he did like one TV film in 91, but this is his first like Hollywood directed film in 97. I still say to this day, this is his best film he's directed, in all sincerity. And the weird thing is that you hear the name Jonathan Mostow, you think of someone that's directed like 20, 30 movies. No, he's only directed like six.
Yeah. Terminator 3, I think is probably his best, or U571 probably. One of those two.
U571 is probably his most critical acclaimed, although it's fucked up that U571, they made the soldiers American instead of British. Because it's based on a true story. And the thing was at the time when I saw it, I was like, hey, this is a really entertaining film. And I gotta admit, I got up and out. I also saw that in Dayton Mall, theater number one. and I gotta admit, when John Bon Jovi, was like, because he was like the photographer for the submarine crew. He's a soldier, but he's also the photographer. I'm like, why are you a photographer? Anyway, and he was like taking a picture with the crew on top of the submarine, and the submarine gets blasted, and like the force of the blast and the fire from that just like blows John Bon Jovi off the submarine.
Uh-huh.
I got up and just was like,
John Bon, no more. Sean loved it.
No more. I was like, yeah, man, get out of here. I don't need you right now. I don't go own an Arena Football League team. I don't need you right now.
That's right. But
like U571 was probably his most critically acclaimed film. And Terminator Rise of the Machines is his highest grossing film. The Surrogates was probably, like three or four years too early.
Yeah. What do you think of that movie?
I think it's okay. Like, I think the book is okay. You know what I mean? I thought the comic was okay. But the thing is, it has a high concept. It was, you know, and at the time in 2009, it was a very high concept. So,
I think for me with that book, I remember seeing that the movie was coming out. And so I snatched up a copy of the book, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, I'll give this a shot. And I watched it and was kind of like, all right, that was all right.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of, you know, put it down and put it on the shelf. And, you know, it's one where if I looked and was like, oh yeah, maybe I'll flip through this again. But, it was just kind of like that. And then the movie felt the same to me. I was like, oh, well, yeah, that was all right.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is. Like, I have no feelings for it at all. And it's no offense to anybody. I just didn't have, don't have most feelings for it. And he's also written a couple of movies as well. Like, he wrote Breakdown. Mm-hmm. But when you hear his name, he sounds like someone who has, like, directed a ton of movies, and he really hasn't.
Yeah, he does have in post-production a movie called Hunter's Prayer. Mm-hmm. Which will be his next film after a 7-year hiatus after that. But it has, it does have Sam Worthington in it, so hopefully it will get some attention anyway.
Oh,
it
I'm says, sure.
An assassin helps a young woman avenge the death of her family.
Oh, nice. So, nice. I will say this though. There are some shots in this film that are very beautiful, and the one shot I enjoy the most is when Jeff is walking out of Bell's Diner the first time, just like, what the fuck is going on here? Where's my wife? And he just has, like, you see, like, you feel, like, all the, like, confusion and just, like, none of this makes any sense. And he walks out of Bell's Diner, and he's just standing there away from Bell's Diner, and it's a crane shot.
Yes.
And the camera just keeps going up and up and up and up. And, like, you can just see the distance between Jeff and Bell's Diner, and the distance between the camera and Jeff, and also the mental distance between Jeff and his wife, Amy. And I'm like, that's perfect. That is a perfect fucking shot.
Yeah. The isolation is very real in that shot there. Yes.
Yes. It is fantastic. And there's a few good shots like that in this film, but that is the best shot.
Mm-hmm. It's not the semi off the, it's not the,
semi. Oh, no. No. We ain't got there yet. Because that's my favorite part of the movie.
Yes. Okay, so we were at the bank sequence, right?
Yes.
Which
yes.
is so crazy to me. Okay, here's the thing, like, after the fact, you know, since I've been able to digest this movie a little for a couple of days, it's been just a few days since I've seen it, I was thinking about it today, and I was like, wait a minute. So these guys have this plan just in case they run across somebody who's isolated from his wife, who happens to have a lot of money, here's what we're going to have them do. That's what this group has planned out.
Yes, now, and the thing is, they also have a plan if, like, say, for instance, if both husband and wife got in the car with them at the same time.
That's right, yes. And so I was like, man, that is fucked up. And I was thinking that, and I remember thinking that, which is when I wrote the note, was when he's trying to get into the bank. And, you know, he's being watched all over, and he can't say anything to the bank manager or anything like that. And then once we get back to JT Walsh's house, then I was like, oh, man, this is fucked up. Like, his barn and shit is messed up. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And his little trap door and all that.
Oh, yeah, that's fucking crazy. And like, even then, and when we get to that, like, I definitely got something to say there.
Sure.
When we get to that, but, like, the whole tension of Jeff being at the bank and for a second trying to explain to the manager, hey, you can't tell anybody this, but, like, you know, basically I'm being held hostage. My wife is being held hostage. This is why I need this money. And he's trying to explain it quietly. And then this dude, like, walks up behind Jeff and is like, hey, manager, I heard I can talk to you about a bank loan for a car. And the manager's like, yeah, sure. Just go over there and sit right there. And Jeff kind of, like, looks over his shoulder, and this dude looks mad suspect.
Yeah, he looks suspect. It's not specific whether he's actually part of the group or not.
Right.
But you get the implication, and he's paranoid enough, and he believes JT Walsh's character enough to where it's like, well, I better not risk it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly. And this was my favorite part for Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Was his acting. And I really like Kurt Russell. I know some people dog on him for being mostly like an action guy that's kind of, you know, not really in the game anymore. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy him. And I think that he's the best when he's doing things like that scene. Or I really like him in a movie that I think is mostly successful in Vanilla Sky when he's the psychiatrist. When he's playing that character. And I actually liked Quentin Tarantino's movie with him in it too. I know not a lot of people like that movie, but I enjoyed him in it as actually an evil character for once. But anyway, so yeah, I do like that scene at the bank quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a fantastic scene because, like, you know, from there it leads to He leaves the bank. Phone ring. Like, see, here's another thing. Pay phones, y'all.
Yeah.
Pay phones.
Oh, yeah.
Pay phones. Like, see, this is the great thing about cinema. Cinema and, like, with music and with many things gives us a recorded history of stuff we either had, used to have, or have used to have, or, man, what the fuck were we thinking? Mm-hmm. And to see, like, pay phones, like, being more reliable than a cellular phone, it's incredible to me, you know? Because, like, there was a moment when Jeff tries to use his cellular phone to call a friend who had a friend in the FBI, and he lost reception because he's way out in bumfuck nowhere.
Right.
And because the thing is, like, man, what if he got in touch with his homie from the FBI? How would the movie have played out then?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it takes all these weird turns, but, like, I like the fact that, yeah, he leaves the bank, phone, like, the phone rings, he picks up the payphone, and he's like, yo, you got to go walk out in the middle of nowhere, and this Earl dude, played by MC Gaines, is gonna pick you up. And remember, like, in the bank, he picked up some stuff in the bank to, like, cause he didn't have $90,000, but, you know, hey, man, you got a MacGyver it. Make it look like 90.
Sure. Have you, before we go away from the payphones, were you a payphone guy?
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, man, listen, man. Go through all the phases in life. You know, I went through, you know, hey, growing up, grew up with payphones. Also had a pager, you know, because it was the 90s, had a pager because, you know, who didn't? And it was cheaper than a cell phone at the time. So, you know, people would call, I'm like, oh, hey. And, like, I had the pager with voicemail,
mm-hmm.
which if you're at home is awesome. But if you're, like, out and about, it sucks because then you got to make two phone calls.
You gotta call your voicemail first.
You gotta call the voicemail first you call, and then call who called you. So, which sucks. But still, like, so yeah, going through like that, yeah, oh yeah, man. Like, that was great. You know what I mean? I mean, granted, nowadays I'm paranoid, and I'm all, you know, and then, like, think about all the germs and stuff on these phones. So now I'm just like, nah, man, y'all can keep them pay phones. I don't want them pay phones. I don't want that. Man, I'll be having handy wipes and Clorox wipes all day on a pay phone.
What's funny about that is the only experience I had with a pay phone is, you know, obviously I knew they were around, and I had, we had one at my dad's restaurant growing up, but I had never had any cause to use it because we had the regular phones for people that worked there. And I was on a trip up to Minnesota from Lincoln, Nebraska, which was about an 8-hour drive or so. Mm-hmm. And so we were going up to Minneapolis, and I was going up to visit a couple that I had introduced. I worked with her and I grew up with him, and they were engaged, I believe, at the time. I don't think they were quite married yet. And they were living up in Minnetonka, Minnesota, which is a suburb of Minneapolis.
Yes.
And so I drive up there, and I am by myself, and I leave after work after, like, you know, 2:00 in the afternoon, 3:00 in the afternoon, something like that. And I leave and I go up there, and all I have are just handwritten notes, right? Because we don't have GPS.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? I don't have a map. I have a piece of paper that I've written some things on. And growing up in Nebraska, I didn't know that there was such a thing as a left lane exit. Because we don't have those in Nebraska. It's right lane exit only, right? Okay. So I get close to my exit, and I'm on the right-hand side, and I don't see shit. I don't see signs for it. I don't see anything. So I go straight through, and I'm through Minneapolis, and I'm way the hell north, and I start seeing signs of Canada border. And I'm like, what? I've obviously gone too far. And so I pull off into this gas station, and there's a payphone. And I'm like, okay, well, I have my buddy's number. I'll just call him and see what the hell, like, what I missed, make sure it's the right exit and all this. And I get out and go to call the number, and they tell me it's $9. And I was like, $9? Like, it can't be more than, like, 20 miles away. I was like, I don't have no $9 and change on me. And so I'm like, what the hell? And so I was like, well, I guess I'll just drive back through. And so I'm leaving the payphone, and I got this homeless dude trying to get into my car.
Oh, no.
Like, trying to get into my passenger side car, or my car. And so I yell at him and tell him to get out of there and all that stuff. And I'm trying to, like, unlock my car and keep him away from my passenger side. And I manage to get in my car and get the hell out of there. Like, I'm on some kind of Fast and Furious thing or something now. You know, I'm spinning tires and peeling out and shit. And I go back and, you know, now it's a right-hand exit and I see it clear as day. And I'm like, well, what the hell? How did I miss it? But I was a shaky little 150-pound white boy from Nebraska. You know, I was a scared little guy in the big bad city. Almost got me.
Yeah, man.
But
man,
that's
man.
The only time that I ever tried to do anything with a payphone.
Yeah. Well, you know, see, it's interesting because you mentioned no GPS.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and this is also probably like before like MapQuest was a major thing.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like you had to use, if you had AAA, you could go to AAA, AAA would pull out a map and be like, okay, this is where you got to go. This is where you should go. And we have this set of instructions made just for you.
Mm-hmm. I always think of the joke from Tommy Boy too, where he's talking about going to a different city and you need a different map because you have different maps of different states.
Yes.
Right. And that joke doesn't work anymore.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. But see, but this is the cool thing about cinema, though. Oh, this yeah. is the cool thing. We, you know, you get to see what, like I said, what was a thing, what is not a thing, what is now a thing. You know, it's all of that. And it's great. So I enjoy this film because the thing is, this film, you have limitations. You know, like if you use like today's technology and put it into this film is done in 10 minutes.
Or if he's just like, no, you're not going anywhere. Sorry. I already called roadside assistance. They're on their way.
Yeah, I called roadside assistance, or better yet, you know, I got an OnStar.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? No, or better yet, you know what? I'm just going to extend my credit. You know what, Amy? I'm just going to fly you out there, and I'm going to get a moving company to move all of our shit, and I will just hop on a plane later, and I'll meet you out. See, then nothing happens. But instead, what we do have is essentially the precursor to Taken. That is what mm-hmm. we have.
Oh, absolutely. It is. Yeah. It definitely is.
Yes.
What's funny is, so they're moving. Apparently all of their shit's already moved because they don't have anything in that car.
No, they don't. They have like a thermos and they got like two suitcases on the top. I hope one nothing important in there because shit, that shit went down the river.
And he's got whatever it is that he needed so bad in the cardboard box to where that started the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's odd. It's odd, but like I said, you just run with it. Mm-hmm. But you know, he ends up besting Earl in the truck, and yes. And then like you know, he runs into the cop again, and you know, the cop shoots. Earl shoots the cop, but like Jeff is trying to escape.
And that was the first time that we figured out that the cops really weren't in on it.
Right.
Because I was like, oh, fuck. Like, the cops are here. Now he's really screwed. Now he's got both of them that's going to shoot him.
Right. And that's the whole thing. Like, it works well enough because it keeps you thinking and guessing, like, okay, wait a minute. Are the cops in on this? Are they not? What's going on here? And then, because, like, you know, when, like, Earl is like, yeah, officer, I'm okay. I'm fine. But the moment Earl pulls out the little gun out of his boot, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, no, the cops aren't in on this at all. They're not in on this at all. And so Jeff tries to escape. Jeff's about to get shot. Cop shoots Earl. Jeff helps Boyd because Boyd is wounded. He picks up the CB and is like, yo, get an ambulance out here right now. And, you know, but the thing is, during all that time, because, like, it's basically like a fight broke out between Earl and Jeff in the car. And Jeff had weapons because, like, he took stuff from the bank, including, like, a letter opener, stabbed Earl in the chest. Like, yo, look, I know we spoiling the shit out of this movie for y'all, but y'all really need to watch this shit. Y'all really need to watch this shit because, like I said, it is the original Taken. It is the original Taken. Please watch this film. But in that scene, you find out where Red is. Red's at a truck stop, and Jeff gets to that truck stop. He finds the truck that Red is driving, and then, like, Kurt Russell does some Snake Plissken shit and, like, you know, and finds a way to, like, get underneath the truck and like get under the truck while the truck is running at like 65 miles an hour, you know, find a way to get under, keep moving under the truck to finally get to a safe spot where no one can see him on the highway. You get to Red's house,
mm-hmm.
which is like out on a farm or like out in BFE. And,
that was when I thought that they were going to try to humanize him a bit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And for a second, it looked like it, didn't it?
Yeah. Cause it's like, oh, here he's got this family and yeah, he's a jerk, but he's got these, you know, innocent family and they're nice people and he's just an asshole is kind of what I was thinking. But no, it swerves on you again because the little kid, he's like, oh shit, I'll shoot him.
Yep.
I'll shoot Kurt Russell. I don't give a damn.
Yeah. And the thing is like the mom is like, cause you think like the mom is like, yo, what the fuck is going on? And then, cause like what happens is that, you know, like I said, Kurt Russell is out there with them. He gets into the bar and he finds his wife is okay. But she's in but she got put in the cellar and, you know, he finds weapons and stuff that he needs. And he knows that like Jeff knows that, Red, Billy, and Al are in Red's house. And so they're eating like, you know, they're with, Red's wife. And so Jeff just walks in there with a gat and is like, y'all gonna give me my wife back. I'm shooting every single one of y'all motherfuckers up in here. Mm-hmm. And then when the son comes in with that shotgun, I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, oh yeah. So the assholeness is all around in this family.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but see, like, it gets weird because at first, like, you think Red's wife is sympathetic to it all. And it's like, yo, what's going on here? What's going on here? What's going on here? And like, you know, and Jeff's like, I just want my wife back, la da 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 da. And when the little boy comes in with the shotgun, and like, Kurt Russell's like, look, kid, you don't want to do that. This isn't about you. I'm not going to hurt nobody. And the mother's like, shoot him. I was like, shit.
I ain't never going to the desert. Nope. So I was like, Jesus, all these people are crazy.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's absolutely nuts. And so like, yes, he does eventually get, Jeff does get his wife back and like, you know, and he kicks Red right in the face and Red and Al and Red's wife are all in the cellar. He throws a bunch of shit over the cellar, but Billy escaped. And so like, Amy and Jeff, they run. They're trying to find a car. They're just trying to find a car with keys so they can escape. And they go through two or three cars, and they can't find keys. And then, like, outside the barn, they see, like, a little mobile home, and they see a truck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they make it out to there. Billy breaks out Al, Red, and Red's wife or whatever. And then from there, Jeff and Amy are trying to find keys to the truck outside the mobile home. And then the shit turns into fucking Duel. And Duel, ladies and gentlemen, is an all-time classic. It's an early Steven Spielberg film starring Dennis Weaver, who is being chased by a fucking big rig across America. And it is fucking grand. It is grand.
And here it's a mobile home versus a semi.
Yes. And we know who wins that match. And so you just see the semi just coming through and it just like plows the mobile home in half. They find, but like Jeff and Amy find keys. They start their truck up and they take the fuck off. And so then it becomes this chase. And once again, like this movie is like two or three different things.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it's like all this high intense action and it turns to this chase between like a big rig, Al in like an Oldsmobile, Billy in the fucked up Trans Am, and everybody's got guns. And then you got the big rig and they're trying to knock Jeff and Amy off the road and explosions and all this shit happens. But Al and Billy die, which is great. They deserve to die. And then it's just the big rig with Red and Jeff and Amy in the truck. And when, I guess that's like, it's like a old school Chevrolet C20. But like, they're about trying to escape through off a bridge and Red rams, the Chevrolet C20, turns it sideways and is trying to knock it off the bridge. And then tries to crush the truck, which then traps Amy's leg underneath the dashboard. But then at the same time, like man, like Kurt Russell, like just do Kurt Russell went Snake Plissken mode again, mm-hmm. hops out the truck, even though Amy's like, please don't leave me. And Snake is like, I got this. And like jumps out the truck, jumps into Red's truck, and was like, nah, bitch, you ain't running us over. I'm taking us both over. I was like, what the fuck? And then like in typical like Hollywood fashion, the truck goes like truck, you think the big rig's going over because like it lost the caboose a while ago. It lost the trailer a while ago. Mm-hmm. Not the caboose, the trailer. And then like, so like you think the big rig, like the big rig's gonna go over, it gets stuck. It's like, you know, it's just dangling and it gets stuck. And then you just, man, you get this like really cool action sequence, you know, between Red and Jeff, and then like, you know, Jeff ends up winning, but Red takes a long fall.
Oh yes,
Red takes a long fall, and you're like, oh man, Red dead. Okay, this is it. You know, with the exception of the mother and the child, who have no idea who these people were, so they'll never be able to find them. Hopefully not. Like Red is dead. So, but still. You know, which we call Kurt Russell has to jump off the big rig before it falls off, and he still has to get his wife out the truck. He ends up getting his wife out the truck, and this is where my favorite part of the scene, my favorite scene, and my favorite part of this whole movie.
Aside from the fact that Kurt Russell's pull up game is strong.
Oh my god, this dude been working out.
Yes.
Because I'm sure there's a lot of his cinematic tricks and whatnot, but I'm like, no, Kurt was strong. Mm-hmm. Kurt was mad strong. That adrenaline was kicked into like 400. He's like, hey, I just survived a big rig going through a mobile home. I have the power. Okay. So Amy and Jeff, Jeff pulls Amy out of the Chevrolet, her legs all been busted and messed up. And like, you know, and they just like, they huddle together, they're close, it's like, it's all over. And like, they both look over the side of the bridge. And like I said, Red fell far, but he fell on rocks. It's a small river, but it's not a big river, but he fell on rocks. But you see Red move a little bit. You see his head move. And the big rig is on, like I said, it's teetering, it's literally like hanging from the edge of the bridge because it's stuck on the Chevrolet C20. Best scene in the entire fucking film. As soon as you see like Red kind of move his head a bit, Amy's like, no man, fuck this bitch. Puts the truck in drive, and then by putting the Chevrolet C20 in drive, that then knocks the big rig finally off the ledge permanently, and the big rig lands right on Red. I was like, this is fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I wrote, woo! Damn, she is cold-blooded.
I'd be cold-blooded, too. Mm-hmm. I would be cold-blooded, too. I wasn't even mad. Dude, when she did that, man, in the movie theater, I just remember Chris and I just started laughing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yeah, he deserved that shit. Yeah, Red deserved that shit. Like, yeah, you ain't coming back from that. There will be no sequel.
No sequel.
And that happens. And then they just, like, Amy and Jeff sit on the edge of the bridge beside their mangled pickup truck, and they just sit there. It's just like, Jesus, like, what a 24 hours that we've just had. And the film just ends.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I love that. See, because movies, like, a lot of movies don't do that. A lot of mainstream films don't do that. It's like, you have to explain everything to me. You have to, like, put everything in a nice little bow. No, life don't always work that way.
Yeah, there's no introduction, like I was saying earlier, about where they are, who they are, what they're doing. There's none of that. And then there's no conclusion in that, or there's no wrap-up. There's no real resolution to their characters. It's just like, here's the end of this action bit, and we're out. This is the story we're telling.
Yep.
You know, we don't need to see if the son is going to try to avenge his father and find this couple. We don't need to set up a sequel or something. We don't need to do any of this BS. It's, he got crushed by the semi. The end.
The end. And I'm good with that. I am absolutely, absolutely, positively good with that. And I'm glad that this film ended that way. Like I said, I enjoy this film immensely. Mm-hmm. Yes, we spoiled the shit out of it. But I'm serious. It is like, it is the progenitor to Taken.
Yeah, it really is. I did find it interesting, a couple of different things from the trivia Did you see that Kurt Russell was helicoptered in and out of the area of shooting so he could be with his family in L.A. at night? I mean, that's how much of the man Kurt Russell was at this time.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. Like,
it's not like it's a plane. It's just, yeah, get me up in this helicopter and take me back to L.A.
Yeah, yeah, that just doesn't surprise me one bit. Not at all. Not at all. Because at that period of time, dude, Kurt was still making movies, man. Like, it's weird because, like, Kurt may have not been the biggest box office draw, but Kurt was still making movies that were profitable, and the thing was, studios were still investing in Kurt Russell. Because this was also the era of the 90s where, like, Kurt went through this, like, weird, I don't want to call it, it's not that it's a renaissance, and it's not that it's, how can I explain this? Let me break it down real quick. There's this period of time in the 90s where it was like all Kurt Russell everything. The good, the bad, and the good, the bad, and the whoo. But like, the thing was, like, we were on the tail end. We were on the tail end of like the 90s Kurt Russell era because like there was Backdraft in 91. There was Unlawful Entry in 92. The comedy Captain Ron. We won't talk about Captain Ron. But there was Tombstone in 93. Stargate in 94, Executive Decision in 96. And see, now we're at the peak. We are at the peak. Because, like, everybody thought Executive Decision was a Steven Seagal movie, and I was like, yo, who's top billing?
It's true.
And I was so happy, dude, man, when Steven Seagal died and the Executive Decision, I was so happy. Anyway, Escape from L.A. in 96. And this is where, it was right at this time, this is where it gets weird. Because Escape from L.A., I do like it, even though it's just a high-budgeted remake of Escape from New York.
Right, yeah.
I still enjoy it. I enjoy it. I mean, like, it's a comic book movie. It really is. It really is. And it's like I said, it's not great. And there's some silly shit, but I'm like, yo, Escape from New York has some silly shit, too.
This is just like, when he just kind of seems like, you know what, I'm just going to do stuff that's fun, that I think is interesting.
But at this time, though, like, Kurt Russell was like, you know, because he had been around forever, and he's a superstar before, but he was really a superstar at this period of time. Like, Stargate, Executive, and, like, yeah, Tombstone, Stargate, and Executive Decision were all very positive, positive profiting movies. And Kurt Russell was a headliner. Escape from L.A., because, like, he's like, yo, I get to come back play Snake Plissken. When I did Escape from New York, I mean, that was like an 80s thing. And then, yeah, it just made a little bit of money, but it was a small budget film. But the film industry was different in the early 80s compared to 96. 96, you know, we were hitting, like, you know, major, like, everybody had a fucking Cineplex, and everybody's trying to have movies, and everybody's trying to make money. So, like, hey, he's a star. Let's do this movie. And, you know, it does so-so, but still, he's still billable. So then you get Breakdown, which didn't cost a lot. And I think it ended up profiting out, but he's still billable. And then it fell apart the next year when Warner Brothers put him in Soldier. Mm-hmm. And it was a sci-fi action film, and that fucker tanked.
Yes,
hard.
Yes.
And,
well, then from that point on, I felt like it was a completely different Kurt Russell. It was, he's not the action guy anymore. It was the older guy, the mentor figure.
Mm.
You know, because we have him in 3,000 Miles to Graceland. And that was kind of like, oh, I mean, for me, that ended up being like an early nod to like an Old Dogs or something, to where it's like, let's get a few of these celebrities that are getting a little bit older and have them do this movie together.
I will admit, I like 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
Yeah, I like it okay. I mean, I like it fine. It's one of those where it's like, okay. But then when he's in Vanilla Sky and he's playing with Tom Cruise and he's supposed to be the older, wiser, calmer sort of character, and he's got a small bit role in that. But I remember seeing that and just thinking that he was a middle-aged man and not an action star anymore, and he's aged gracefully enough for me in that movie to where I'm like, okay, I can see this. He's going to start getting like lawyer films and, you know, important movies now. It's kind of what I was assuming he was going to get.
Yeah.
And he kind of, you didn't see him as regularly. I mean, you saw him in some things, but, you know, I thought, especially after Miracle, when he did that movie, I was like, okay.
Oh, no, dude, like, he, like, back, that was back-to-back Disney flicks. Mm-hmm. Like between Miracle and Sky High. You know, Miracle and Sky High back to back, and like both of those films were like were very successful. So you're like, oh, Kurt Russell's back again, and then like he does Poseidon, yet again Warner Brothers, and it's like, damn, they're like, you and Warner Brothers just don't see eye to eye. You know, that was it was between Virtual Studio. What studio was that? Oh shit, I can't remember. But still, yet again, Soldier was with Warner Brothers and it tanked. This remake of the Poseidon Adventure, which I understand, I get it. You know, you want to do a remake, you could bring this in the current day, special effects, it should be great. Yet again, failure. And Warner Brothers pulled him back down again. But he rebounded the next year with Death Proof, even though Grindhouse wasn't a financial success, it was a critical success. And it was also broken down to two DVDs instead of one film.
But yeah, that was like, okay, here, Kurt Russell can be like this pet from Quentin Tarantino, and he can be this dirty, ugly character that he so rarely played. And I was like, oh, this is going to be perfect. Like, this will be something that he can do.
Yeah.
And then he did a short and then Touchback that I don't even know what that is.
Ooh. I don't know what that is either. Nah, I must look.
I mean, he's Coach Hand, so it's got to be something football related.
Yeah, it was a direct-to-video film.
Okay.
Because it says it has a box office of 204,000, so that was definitely a limited release. I have no idea what this is about. Couldn't tell you, but somebody tried to do something with it, and nothing happened.
And what the hell is The Art of the Steal?
Now, The Art of the Steal is that I've seen on Netflix. I've seen that on Netflix, and I haven't watched it.
Hmm.
And it said it went in the theaters, and it was limited release. I'll tell you that from the numbers. But yeah, I didn't even like say I've seen it on Netflix a few times, but I'm like I haven't watched it though.
Yeah. So even if it was a wide release, that would have been 6 years since Death Proof, which was supposed to be an indie little small movie, right? And
right.
So if you go back to Poseidon, I mean, you're talking, that's 7 years. Furious 7, where it's not like he's a main character or anything like that, that's almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is he doing? Like, is he just decided, okay, I've had enough. I'm just, going to be a father and all of that, or what the hell is he doing?
Well, he has said on many occasions, he says he still gets projects pitched to him. And he gets scripts sent to him, but he said he won't do something unless it really interests him. And like when he got the role for Furious 7, he said it really caught his eye. And even when they had to make changes with Paul Walker died, he still enjoyed it. And he's supposedly coming back for the eighth film. Like the role he has in 7 is kind of funny because like he's essentially their Nick Fury.
Okay.
And I was absolutely fine with it. But you know how I feel about Black Avengers. Furious, the Fast and the Furious franchise is Black Avengers. It's like, and I love it. It's the internet. It's like the Justice League of cars, and I'm good with it.
what the hell is Bone Tomahawk?
That, I've heard of it. I have not watched it, though. A lot of people have been talking about it lately, especially since he's been in Hateful Eight. They've been talking about Bone Tomahawk because Bone Tomahawk is a Western. So yeah. And that's that's the thing. Like lately he won't do a role unless he's purely interested in the role. So yeah. Yeah. Like Kurt's just, Kurt is Kurt, man.
And then, he's rumored to be in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Huh.
That's what it says anyway.
Hmm.
I don't know what that would be, unless it's what's his face's dad or something.
Maybe. You never know. You never know. Never ever know.
Hmm. But that was so that was the first thing that I saw on IMDb. The other thing that I thought was interesting in the trivia was the origin of the characters that I sort of was wondering about. And it says the original opening in the script shows Jeff Taylor as a photographer in an unnamed war-torn area. He blames himself for the death of a woman and upon returning to America quits freelancing and takes a job in San Diego. That would have been so completely out of place.
Oh, extremely out of place.
So I'm glad, even though that would have given me some of the answers that I was wanting at the beginning of the film, that would have been such a sore thumb.
Yeah, because really, I mean, yes, it's a plot point to move Jeff, but at the same time, it doesn't fit with the rest of the film.
Yeah, because it's not like he's having trouble with anything or issues with anything because of that.
Right. He's not, you know, suffering from like PTSD or anything of that nature.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. So anyway, so that was the other thing that I thought was interesting on IMDb. Was there anything that we haven't discussed yet, Sean, that you wanted to bring up before we start wrapping this baby up?
To my knowledge, no. I think we pretty much got everything, like, as far as like the differences in technology from that was being used in 97 to, you know, what we have today and how that changes how we view movies. Like, you know, like the way, like I said, the cinematography, like I said, I really thought Jonathan Moss did a great job with the cinematography, especially like I said, during that one crane shot, but also the chase scene at the end of the film.
Yes.
Like the staging and the positioning of the way the vehicles are, it's really great. So, I like that. I really do. And like I said before, I thought JT Walsh did a fucking incredible job.
Yeah, I think everybody in here is cast very well because I think everyone does a good job and delivers good performances. And that's why it's kind of surprising that Mastow hasn't got more jobs.
Well, I think from outside looking in, I think it's more of a thing of his films look great. But outside of Terminator, because Terminator is a franchise that makes money no matter who you put under the camera, especially internationally. Internationally, it makes money very well no matter who's behind the camera. Sorry, who's behind the camera. However, all of his other films aren't like that. They're not profitable. Now, U571 is profitable, but even then, that had controversy behind it because it was based off of a true story, and it was with British soldiers, and they replaced them with American soldiers. So it's weird. It's very weird. You would think, but seriously, you would think because of his director skills, and you know, and his writing skills, you would think he would have more work. But it could also be a thing of he could be writing like a lot of script doctoring. He could be doing a lot of rewrites for other films. He could be doing a lot of stuff that we don't know about. But you would think he would have more directorial shots under his belt.
Yeah, maybe he's just not that interested in it. Yeah, I mean, maybe he does something else.
Possibly.
Who knows? Who knows? All right. Well, this was an enjoyable one. I'm glad this was one I would have never guessed that I would have talked about Breakdown again after seeing it so long ago. In North Platte at home on a TV. But that was a old CRT TV.
Oh, jeez.
Before flat screens and wide screens were a thing, people. You know, the old tubes, heavy as shit.
Yes, VHS tapes. And if you wanted to buy a widescreen edition of a VHS movie, you was going to pay money for it.
Yes, you are. God, those are so expensive. Also, if you wanted to pay for episodes of shows... Like if I wanted to buy a Star Trek episode, Star Trek The Next Generation, I was shelling out $20.
Yeah, and for like, an episode. Was it like two episodes of one tape, or was it like an episode per tape?
I want to say it was two.
Man, they was milking the fuck out of that.
Oh day. Yeah, well yeah, you got Star Trek The Next Generation's got 177 of them.
Yeah. Two episodes of tape is like, yeah, you're going to buy all 80 plus of these motherfuckers at $20 a pop. But it was even worse, though, when DVD came around and the way the original Star Trek series was released, and it was like a few episodes per disc, and they were fleecing motherfuckers for that.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. Now they've got like 70 different versions of it. And I'm like, I don't even know what the hell. You know, it's like, if I were to put that on like a wish list for Christmas or something, it's like, I don't even know which one I would do. I'd have to spend like a day to research it all.
Yeah. Do you want the originals? Do you want the original originals? Do you want the original remaster? Do you want the original remaster with new special effects? Do you like, it's, there's so many different versions now.
Yeah. And then there's Blu-ray versions of all that shit.
Yes.
It's like trying to figure out the Star Wars. You know?
No, you just don't. You just don't. Somewhere, someone's handing somebody money, and somewhere CBS and Paramount are making more money off of Star Trek than we could possibly ever imagine.
Yeah. It sounds right. All right. Well, if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page where you can like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to amazon.com and search for our wish list. It's full of movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies in case you're in the giving mood. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I do want to thank Mr. Pryor for coming on once again and discussing another film with me. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in touch with you, where could they do so?
If you want to get in touch with me or if, like, follow what I do on Twitter, you can follow me at Sean, S-H-A-W-N, followed by the letter R. Last name Pryor, P-R-Y-O-R, @SeanRPryor. I do have a podcast called The Black Box, so you can find that at the HHWLOD Podcast Network at HHWLOD.com. Or if you use like a podcast aggregator or stuff like that, whether it be Downcast or like the iTunes podcast app or like an Android app, just type The Black Box, and you'll be able to find the podcast there. Got a couple comic books coming out later this year. Those are currently in production right now. I can't get into too many details, but once, you know, things really get kicking off, I'll mention those. And, so that's where you can catch me right now. Some things may be changing for me podcast wise in the future. I'm starting to really plan my creative, my creative side to different levels in 2016. So I'm very excited about that. And, thank you again for having me on the show, Eric. I always have a great time, especially, like I said, man, like I'm from, man, the fire was going strong too in the fireplace while I was watching this movie. Man, it's going strong.
I'm sure so, it was.
So like, I really enjoyed this a lot. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for listening. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
Break down, honey, take me through the night.